After months of lockdowns, social distancing, and a complete change in how we work, play, and live, a lot of attention and hope is turning to the development of a vaccine for the novel coronavirus. Immunologist Dr. Anthony Fauci of the White House Coronavirus Task Force had this to say earlier this month.
By the beginning of 2021, we hope to have a couple of 100 million doses.
But what would need to happen for that timeline to be possible? Marcos Garcia Ojeda is a professor of molecular and cell biology at the University of California, Merced. He wrote a piece for The Conversation titled, What Needs to Go Right to Get a Coronavirus Vaccine in 12 to 18 Months? Marcos, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Judith.
Well, there are a few different types of vaccines, and you think that those that are genetically based have the most promise for a coronavirus vaccine. First, can you start us off by briefly explaining how that type of vaccine works?
So, Judith, that type of vaccine works a little bit different than traditional vaccines, where a inactivated or killed microorganism is injected into a person. What we are now trying to do is to use DNA or RNA, which are the molecules that encode the information to make proteins, and inject those directly into a tissue of a patient, like the muscle. And there, the muscle cells will then read the information and make a protein that resembles the one in the virus. So we're no longer using a viral particle per se, but having the information delivered by the DNA or RNA molecule to now be able to make the protein. And in that way, now we trigger the immune response based on that foreign protein that has been given to the person in the form of that genetic information.
And why do you think that that type of vaccine, as you said, not the most usual kind of vaccine that we're used to, why do you think that that type specifically would be the best for the coronavirus?
Well, part of the issue is that the time that it takes to generate a traditional vaccine using the tested methodology could take up to 10 years for some of them. So this kind of new technology can shorten the amount of time that the vaccine could be produced from the point in which the vaccine is developed by the manufacturings to the point that it gets to the people. Generating DNA and RNA is a lot faster. It's very direct. It doesn't usually require to have the killing of the microorganism per se. And oftentimes, DNA and RNA is a lot more stable. So you have issues that are going to most likely expedite the ability of manufacturers to be able to have a vaccine available for delivery. So that is one issue. The other one is the potential elimination of side effects that may have when you're injecting a very defined molecule like an RNA molecule. So taken together, those could be potential benefits that may lead us to a vaccine that is available in a shorter amount of time. That said, the challenge that we have is that we have never had a vaccine developed using RNA that has been available to people, and we have only had vaccines using DNA available for animals in veterinary use. So we are still not have a vaccine using either DNA or RNA that has been used for people.
So I want to make sure that I'm understanding this. So with the injection of the protein, what does that mean? Say I get, say this vaccine works and I get immunized with it, and then I'm exposed to the coronavirus. What happens in my body then?
Once you get a protein made in your body, your immune cells are going to recognize that protein as a foreign agent, and they're going to launch an immune response. Ideally, you will have an immune response that will have two components: B cells that are going to produce antibodies, and antibodies are the molecules, proteins that can directly recognize and eliminate the microorganism. But the second one, it's going to be a T cell response. And T cells are, I tend to think of them as the general and soldiers of the immune system. The helper cell is the one that coordinates the entire immune response, and the killer cell is the one that is going to actually destroy viral infected cells. So oftentimes simply injecting a protein can lead to antibody response, but not often to T cell responses. So maybe one of the things that a vaccine that is ideal would be to tickle both arms of the immune system, both the antibody response and the T cell response. So the other thing that is that we would like to have that agent that you're using in the vaccine to give you long-lasting immunity. And that is something that is still somewhat unknown against the coronaviruses, for example.
We're talking right now with Marcos Garcia Ojeda. He's a professor of molecular and cell biology at the University of California, Merced. And he wrote a piece for The Conversation titled, What Needs to Go Right to Get a Coronavirus Vaccine in 12 to 18 Months. Now, Marcos, as you said earlier, it can take a long time, usually in the more traditional way of producing vaccines, to get a vaccine that's ready for market. The average is about 10 years. They are also very expensive to produce. Mm-hmm. And I think in your article, you said an average of $1 to $5 billion. So
yes.
How you talked a little bit about how we can speed up the timeline. Where is that investment money going to come from?
Well, right now there are some partnerships from private foundations, the government, and of course, companies that are working together to try to get the funding and as well push forward the developing a vaccine. Recently, there was an Operation Warp Speed, which is a public-private partnership initiated by the government that it has never done before. It's an unprecedented partnership to try to accelerate the development, the manufacturing, and the distribution of a potential COVID-19 vaccine. So that is where we're trying to figure out where the money is coming from and how to speed things up. Also, traditionally, the vaccine developing process has been done step by step. You first do the animal studies. Following animal studies, you do a phase one trial with few volunteers, followed by a phase two clinical trial, which may have 100 volunteers, to a much larger clinical trial that could have thousands of volunteers. That would be the phase three. And instead of waiting to do a phase one, phase two, and phase three trial, what many companies are doing now is sort of developing together. Do a phase one trial with the animal studies. Do a phase one and two trial. And instead, for example, of waiting for a candidate that meets all the good checkboxes to have the vaccine appropriately before we start making it, companies are putting are betting that their candidates are going to be good, and they're being encouraged by the government to take the risk of starting to manufacture those vaccines before they are approved. So if a good candidate comes out, the vaccine's already being manufactured, and we don't have to wait to see if it works or not. That, of course, can cause a loss to a company, because if the vaccine is a dud, they're going to lose that money. But since there are multiple candidates being tested simultaneously in many different countries, including the US, they're banking in one of them is going to actually be able to stick and produce the kind of immunity desired to protect people against the virus that caused COVID-19.
So, Marcos, we've been talking a lot about development. Of course, then there's production. And
yes.
Are there estimates of how many doses we might need right from the start to be able to address this pandemic globally?
That's an excellent question. And most of the studies that I have seen are thinking about the U.S., having hundreds of thousands of doses. But COVID needs to be treated at a global scale. So only having vaccines to the U.S. may not put an end to the pandemic, because globalization has made it that people travel over the world. So it is necessary then to have a vaccine that is going to be affordable and produced at very large scale to reach not only people in the U.S., but everybody. And that's why many organizations like the Doctors Without Borders are encouraging organizations to try to make the vaccine available at cost. So so foundation can help the companies guard themselves against some of the losses, because Otherwise, a vaccine may not be available for everybody, and it's not going to be useful if it's only available for people who can afford it. So I don't know if I can give you an exact number to answer mm-hmm. your question more directly, but I'm imagining that we're going to be requiring millions of doses to be able to be distributed around the entire world.
Well, and Dr. Anthony Fauci of that White House Coronavirus Task Force said just last mm-hmm. week that in his estimation, a vaccine for the novel coronavirus may not provide long-lasting protection. Yes. So does that mean it might be more like a flu shot than, say, one against measles, where we get it maybe one and a booster and then we're good for pretty much our lives?
That is an interesting point, because I guess as part of the speed that we're trying to develop vaccines, we're thinking about the safety. We want to ensure that this is the safest vaccine possible, but it may not be the vaccine that gives us the heaviest amount of protection. And I think that that is a gamble that people are willing to take, to get a vaccine that protects a good number of people, but it's not maybe the most perfect vaccine, as long as the vaccine has a high level of safety. And then use that as a first wave of prevention until new vaccines are developed that could be a lot more effective at preventing the illness. So that may get us into a cycle like the one that you describe, where eventually we're going to be having vaccines coming around that are going to be better, more effective, and therefore increase the amount of protection of the global population.
So it sounds like what you're saying, Marcos, is that there is room in the market for more than one vaccine and possibly more than one type of vaccine if we're Absolutely. Going to have any hope of stemming the coronavirus pandemic.
Absolutely. That is correct. Taking a single approach, like putting all our eggs in one basket, it's not going to work to try to fight this pandemic with only one vaccine. And this is why molecular approaches, this is why the tested and tried approaches are all being looked into, taking into consideration to try to reach a vaccine that eventually is going to be effective and be able to help a lot of people.
Well, Marcos, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us to understand the complexities of this situation.
My pleasure, Judith, and thank you for having me over in the show.
Marcos Garcia Ojeda is a professor of molecular and cell biology at the University of California, Merced. He joined us to discuss his piece for the conversation titled What Needs to Go Right to Get a Coronavirus Vaccine in 12 to 18 Months. You can find a link to that article over at WPR.org/Central Time, and just look for the program note for this segment. That's Marcos Garcia Ojeda.